The road is calling. Embrace the thrill of the drive with the all-new, fully electric Audi Q6 e-tron. Featuring effortless power and advanced Audi tech, the next chapter of Audi starts now.
That is, of course, the fantastic theme tune to Skyfall, which is my favourite of the James Bond franchises. And the reason we're talking about it is because creative control has been handed over from Barbara Broccoli and her half-brother Michael Wilson to Amazon. Curious, no? Well, joining me to talk through what is going on is Emmett Ryan. Emma, before we get into the implications of it all, can you just explain and remind us how, when and why Amazon entered this conversation at all?
Well, Amazon bought MGM in 2022, which substantially increased the rights it had to a lot of well-known entertainment properties. Obviously, James Bond is the main one we're talking about, but there's Rocky and Creed. They owned the underlying rights to The Handmaid's Tale, even though it's not an Amazon show. Stargate, Legally Blonde, RoboCop, The Pink Panther, just to give a few of them. Like, there's a lot of well-known stuff now that are the rights to, so to speak, belong to Amazon as a result of that deal 3 years ago.
And I suppose it makes sense from an Amazon point of view. We know that they are much more than just the online marketplace or the people who make Kindle. The Amazon streaming service, I suppose I never really think of it. Like, is Amazon a key player in this part of the world when it comes to streaming services?
Growing one, but it's always been, I suppose, more tactical in how it did it. Like, it doesn't rely on, it does have a lot of volume, but it doesn't lean on its volume the way, say, Netflix or Disney does. It really goes for its headline franchises. So the best known ones of those are The Boys, there's Reacher as well, and Invincible have been huge for them. And of course, Fallout was very, very big for them this year as well.
Okay, so they do have a comprehensive portfolio. I suppose James Bond is such an iconic franchise. I don't know about you, but I have clear visions of one being on ITV when I was growing up and you just watch it. Or in recent years, I've been obsessed with many of the James Bond movies starring Daniel Craig. Is this, like, this to me feels like a business story rather than an entertainment story for the Broccoli and Wilson siblings to hand over creative control to Amazon MGM.
Is, and it's the one surprise, I suppose, is that they've finally done it, because the Broccolis were notoriously strict in how much they wanted to keep creative control, often for a lot of Bond fans, too. It's a detriment. Like, there have been some Bonds which I'd politely describe as forgettable. Like, you know, I'm a big Bond fan, but some of them where, you know, you kind of go, oh, really, really? And you can see it's because sort of, you know, those Broccoli sort of hands are all over it, and they were very protective of what anyone could do with it. So now that, as well, there's this giant corporate monolith over it, it's going to be different. Whether that's good or bad is hard to say, but it's certainly going to change.
Yeah, I don't know if you went down the rabbit hole that I did back when the Sony email hack happened a number of years ago, and Barbara Broccoli was one of the people targeted. There was a lot of talk about the Bond films, Daniel Craig's reluctance to engage in certain parts of publicity and all the rest. But you could see how passionate she in particular was about the tone of the movies and what was Bond-esque and what was not. Is this relationship and this handing over of creative control opening the door to the watering down of the franchise now? Are we going to have James Bond, the origin story, and Moneypenny, the woman behind the desk, and all that kind of jazz?
That's, I mean, the immediate reaction from people has been that. I suppose the thing I would point out with Amazon is they tend to be slower. Like, it's not that they're against doing stuff like that, but if you look at them compared to a Disney, where, you know, we've lost count of how many Star Wars related series there are, how many Marvel spin-off series there are, it's a lot slower with Amazon. They aren't looking to get that kind of volume out. Like, even for context in one of their properties, people are aware of the Jack Ryan series they had. They also, related property they have is the Rainbow Six property, which was another Tom Clancy. They produced a film that was basically a prequel to that called Without Remorse back in 2021. A sequel has been in the works ever since then. Like, it's still, it's not in development hell. They are still very much planning on making it, but as you might have noticed, it's 4 years later now, it's still not done. And realistically, we're thinking not until at least 2026. So Amazon don't tend to rush the same way Disney might, for example, with what, when they get a property, they have to get as many things out as possible. I suppose the biggest surprise for me really with this is that, like, Amazon's biggest strengths have been, well, when I say originals, they are all other people's IP, but they were the first ones to sort of bring the property to sort of, you know, a series format like Reacher, I mentioned already, which had two movies, but the series is very different in style and tone. The Boys, straight from the comic book. Fallout, straight from the video game. Invincible, straight from the comic book. Like, there's the Lord of the Rings of Power, but even with that, you know, they haven't, like, suddenly gone about making about three or four different variants of it. They have just gone season by season so far. So they don't tend to rush to the same degree. So while I wouldn't rule out spin-off properties related to Bond, like, you know, for those who are of a certain age might remember the terrible James Bond Jr. cartoon from the 90s. I don't think we're going to see them rushing to do that. The one thing I'd have a little bit of hope for, oddly, is because of the general tone towards heroes being cast in a darker light these days, is that given how dark Bond was in the original Fleming novels, we might actually get, you know, more Craig-esque type Bonds, like, because Craig and Dalton are easily the two darkest Bonds that have ever performed it. I think we might see more Craig-esque stories, like, although possibly toning down, if anything, the outlandish parts, which people go, well, that's part of Bond. Well, at the same time, maybe, but if it's that versus kind of going all wackadoodle, you know, going either lighter or too soft, I'd probably say either, you know, either much darker or too light, sorry, rather. I'd probably prefer that they ended up going much darker than too light.
But I was reading that, you know, Amazon shelled out an extra $1 billion to get this creative control. So they're obviously they're either very confident that a lot of people want to watch the back catalogue on demand, or that there must be some form of card up their sleeve.
Also, part of the thing with the Broccolis and the creative control is how slow they would be at, you know, moving on from a Bond. So famously, the discussion of who's replacing Daniel Craig has been going on for a very, very long time. It predates COVID, for context, Jess. And I think that's one of the things that, and the same thing happened after Brosnan as well, and after Dalton. So it's like, you know, the Broccolis were notoriously slow in finding what they thought was the right Bond, to a point of it being, frankly, silly that, like, how long they took about it, because it basically ruled actors out repeatedly. Like, people might not forget, but Brosnan was ruled out at one point. He was meant to be when Dalton went in, but he couldn't get out of his TV series, Remington Steele. So, I think one of the things Amazon want to have is not just have the rights, but to make sure that there is property being made, actual content being made, because, you know, No Time to Die may only be a few years old, but at the same time, like, the next Bond movie, there is no plan right now.
And I suppose the other thing that this has made me think about in the last few days is, like, during the writer's strike and the actor strike and all the strikes that were happening over the last few years in America, there was a lot of talk about protecting the creative parts of the movie and TV industry. And I just wonder, in the era of AI writers and all the rest, you know, if they do go down the road at some stage of fleshing out different, you know, mini series or individual stories from the Bond ecosystem, like, is that a good thing or a bad thing from an entertainment point of view?
Well, it depends on how well they do it, is the short version, because the natural thing is always caution, don't do too much. But I suppose the one thing I'd say reassuring people is Amazon, for corporate reasons, have that approach, because fundamentally their video streaming service exists to get more people using Prime, the shopping service. Like, that is the core reason it exists. You get people subscribing to that platform and they are Prime customers as well, so they're tied together. So their idea is that they want to be making sure they are getting more people to consider subscribing to them. And you mentioned at the top of this segment that people are wondering, well, what will I keep, what won't I keep? And for Amazon, because they're trying to keep all those people so they can keep them on Prime, that's why they're buying up properties like this. Like, MGM's value for a very, very long time has been its library rather than what it was actually producing. It hasn't churned out to the same degree in a very long time. So it owns the Rocky franchises, it owns Stargate, it owns RoboCop, Legally Blonde, the Pink Panther. There's an awful lot of stuff there where they have basically got sort of the long-term rights, where there's quite a lot of movies in those series. And as a result, they can kind of go, well, that'll help protect us in that respect. So obviously they are, you know, have that sort of, you know, the base behind the core series they put out, which they pretty much do treat in an event-based scenario. So I wouldn't be as worried about sort of the dilution here, as I'm saying. If they do produce a series, they are only going to do it if they feel it's going to work, because the one thing they don't want to do is have it have people go, well, this is kind of a waste of subscription, isn't it? They don't want negative reactions, basically.
Which again makes sense from a business point of view. We've spoken before about Amazon dabbling in the world of live sports. I mean, is there an angle here that they are producing or priming themselves to become a TV broadcaster, but TV taking on new meaning rather than the traditional TV?
Like themselves and Netflix have clearly been moving down that route of trying to make sure they are, you know, encapsulating as much as possible. Like Amazon have had a lot of tennis for a long time, is the best known in terms of ongoing properties. Obviously, they also have like some football and have had some American football in the past. And, you know, they try to, you know, build around it to make sure that they are going to have, you know, reasons for people to try them. But obviously with live sports rights, there's more of a, the moment is the key thing there. So they are very tactical in what they buy. It's either relatively low cost for a high value customer like tennis, or it's you know, something where they try and get as much of it as possible at once. And like we've seen that, like Netflix was basically against doing live broadcasting for most of its existence. And so it started off with a couple of concerts. It's obviously gone into boxing now. It has like the WWE every week live. So it has gone down that route. So certainly these companies are looking at it as a case of sports is going to be part of it. But the key challenge for them is not that it's sports, is that sports and being live are fundamental to each other, which is very, very different to the rest of a streaming service. And that's the line they're very wary of. It's not so much that it's sport, it's the live element, and how do you pair that is what they're being careful about.
Yeah, and I suppose the question that this will come back to for the average consumer is, how much is this all going to cost? Because at the moment, and I always talk about it, we have so many streaming services. We have traditional TV packages, we have our internet package, we have our phone package. It all tots up to be quite expensive just to sit down and have a chilled Saturday. And I suppose, as you said there, like Amazon is, because it's so tied to their Prime subscription, which is a moneymaker for them, will we get to a stage where it is the place? Like, is it going to overtake Netflix? I think Netflix is still, because it was the first out of the traps here in Ireland, it's the one that comes front of mind. But is the proposition from Amazon getting so attractive and so affordable when you look at the benefits of it, that it could, you know, in the blink of an eye, be in that dominant position?
Getting to a dominant position is going to be very hard, given how relatively small still their overall catalogue is. Like, they do go more event-based, but I think they see themselves more as, say, a HBO versus an NBC back in the 90s, whereas you'll pay that bit, you'll pay, even though they are the cheaper option, oddly, because you're paying for Amazon for specific content, whereas you're paying for Netflix for the total package, really. And I think that's sort of the difference in how they sort of pitch themselves. With Amazon, they know they're, you know, to spend to be the, you know, the dominant force over Netflix is probably not an amount of spend they want to go to in reality, because it's just, you know, what they feel they don't need to do. Like, for them to get what they want, which is essentially recurring users of Prime as a shopping service alongside the video, they will go with what they feel best works. That most of their investments, like Bond, I think, really are to protect that investment. And obviously with the creative control over Bond, they can now start making the movies without worrying about keeping the Broccolis happy, and start actually getting revenue from the box office of that, as well as obviously the future streaming revenue that comes with it.
Yeah, I have to say, I've been fascinated by this story, and I think it's a good excuse to go back and watch some of the Bonds. But I'll be interested to see what Amazon does with the franchise over the coming years, I'd say, rather than months. Before I let you go, I always like to have random questions for you. I just wanted to know, I'm going to talk about it after the break, but what did you make of Apple's unveiling of the iPhone 16 SE?
I'll be honest, like everything since the 13 has been kind of going, that's nice, dear, with Apple. I'm waiting for the next phone that's actually a big step forward, because the 13 was a step forward, no question about that. Everything else has felt like, ah, yeah, you're there, great, good for you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, until we see another step forward phone, you know, Apple announcements for me are good for you, have a nice day.
Yeah, absolutely. And come here to me, have you tried the S25? Because we were talking about it on the Packenny show a few weeks ago. I gave my review and my sentiment is exactly the same in that a lot of the talk, and we spoke to the head of Samsung Mobile in Ireland on this programme a few weeks ago, and I was struck by how the majority of that conversation was around the AI features. But when I was doing the review, there was nothing really that I couldn't already do with my Pixel.
I think that's what it comes back to. I haven't tried the S25 yet, but right now I think all of the phone makers are trying to work out what they can make as being the next core feature, and they are, you know, struggling. Like, the fundamentals are you know your user experience and your battery life are the two most important things for people, along with the camera quality. But you know, the camera quality is already at a point now, whereas, you know, you've got to have a really, really bad phone for the camera not to be good. Like, you know, user experience and battery life are what matter the most now. And so adding on another thing, and maybe go, oh, that's the reason to get it, is proving challenging.
Are you a big AI user day to day? Because I still am struggling. So there's certain things that I like, and that there's a novelty factor, but I use things like Copilot every now and then in work just to help me digest or maybe rewrite something. But I'm curious, because you're obviously a big tech fan, you're a big nerd like me. Has AI integrated itself fully into your life yet?
I use it a fair bit. Like, I know with my sports coverage, oddly, more than anything, because I, you know, run my own business, you know, as a basketball site, for developing sort of graphics and stuff, I find it quite useful. But the biggest use I'd have, to be honest, it's one of the reasons I have a premium subscription for ChatGPT, is I'm self-employed and I work from home, Jess. If I want to bounce ideas off people, it's a lot easier to just use that.
And does it work well? Because I've tried doing that a bit, and maybe I need to get better at the prompts side of things. But do you obviously get a benefit for it, the fact that you're paying for it?
Yeah, I just find as well, like, once, you know, there's something, they clearly, you know, it's smoother with the paid version. I'm guessing that's deliberate, that they have a bit clunky with the unpaid version to make you realize, oh, it's a lot smoother if you do it this way. So I find it a bit easier to use. Now, it still gets a lot of stuff wrong, so I have to often, the piece I always stress people if you're using a ChatGPT or an equivalent is, accurate information only, please, should be the first words you write in every prompt. If you do that, you'll be fine. You know, just at the very start, say accurate information only, please. And if you really want to go, which I often do, is like, and it's okay to be wrong, or it's okay to not know, sorry, is what I say. It's like, if you don't know, say you don't know. So, because quite often it'll just try and, like, you know, make you happy. It's like, no, making me happy is telling me you don't know. I've always, the second smartest thing anyone ever said in their life was, I don't know. And AI models, LLMs, haven't quite reached that yet.
Not yet, but I'll give that a go. I'll definitely give that a go. Emmett, it's always a pleasure to chat to you. I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, I'd love to know what you think. Are you using AI?